going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Another edition of the Going Deep podcast, and I love when we go deep on all things sports, docuseries or documentaries, and that's what we're going to do on this very episode. And the one that is out right now that everyone is talking about is Messi Meets America. It is on Apple TV+. Plus, the season is still going on, but the first three episodes are out. And the additional episodes will be created in production and will premiere later this season. I know it's crazy to think that it's fall weather and yet we still are in the heart of an MLS season. But we've been following Leo Messi for many seasons, over 20, technically. He's been a record-breaking career, followed his excellence from Barcelona and PSG. Obviously, the pinnacles winning the World Cup in Qatar in 2022 with Argentina. And after that, I remember thinking, well, he's at the top of the sport. Is he really going to pull the trigger and come to MLS, come to North America? It's been rumored, but it did happen. He made that landmark decision that I think has a chance to change the face of soccer, not just in the United States, but in North America altogether, because, as you know, the next World Cup is being held in Mexico, USA, and right here in Canada. But in Miami, Inter Miami is a vibe. It is this team that everyone's talking about, even though the Miami Heat were going after Dame Lillard and the Miami Marlins were in the postseason, but all of the conversation, all of the heat, if you will, was with Inter Miami and Messi, with the stars that were lined up to watch the star of stars. And so I wanted to watch the series and see the level of access they were going to get with someone of that stature and what the hoopla was like on the ground in Miami and what it was like throughout the league as he bounced back and forth, competing for a League Cup title and obviously selling out every stadium he went to, whether it was regular season or cup competition. And then when I heard who was behind this project, I got really excited. Names that might not be household, but certainly what they work on is. Emmy Award winner Tim Pastor, who brought us Free Solo and Jane, he was on this project as an executive producer, as well as our next guest, Scott Boggins, who brought us The Circus, which is one of my favorite things to watch. It essentially follows political campaigns, and sports fans are well aware of his work with 24/7. Well, Smuggler Entertainment, that group, produced this with association and help from Major League Soccer for Apple. And how all of those parties come together to document a global icon is what I wanted to learn. So let's go deep on Messi Meets America with Scott Boggins.
Lionel Messi is here.
Lionel Messi is as big as it gets.
Messi!
This is one of the greatest players in the world.
Thanks for taking this time, Scott. Congratulations on a beautiful piece of work. The biggest question is, why now? The Messi story is ongoing and unfolding. What made it intriguing to capture this chapter of it?
Donovan, first of all, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me. And we're a huge fans of, of Inter Miami. We are incredibly proud of the series that that we've been working on since July. You asked the question, why now? It is a transformative moment for this organization, for Inter Miami. It's a transformative market, a transformative moment for soccer in America. And so this is an amazing opportunity to tell that story from the inside looking out, with our partners at MLS and Inter Miami, and with Lionel Messi and his group. We've been able to embed ourselves, and cameras have embedded since July, and we've been telling this remarkable story on how the impact is felt both on and off the pitch. And what's been really fascinating is to see the inner dynamics between Leo and his teammates. And a lot of those teammates were our 18, 19 year old kids, 20 year old kids, who, you know, had come straight out of the academy. And we've been very fortunate to have been able to watch that grow, that develop, that bond develop, not just, you know, for a few days. We've been able to see that over the course of the last few weeks and months of the season. And so anytime that, you know, as a storyteller, you can go in and really show that sort of team dynamic, you know, we're super proud of what, you know, of what this series has become.
One of the reasons I like documenting high-level athletes is you get a chance to learn about them and from them. Being so close to Messi for so long, what did you learn that you didn't know going into the project?
That's a great question. You know, we had heard from many that he's just a very humble, very relatable person, a family man. And so we went in, we would like to be able to film and capture moments of you as a dad, you know, as a husband. We'd like to see if there's ways to, you know, understand and see you off the pitch. And he was very gracious with his time, and allowed us to do that. And you'll see that later in the episodes, in the series rather. And again, we were incredibly fortunate to capture these priceless moments with him and his kids and his family. And so it wasn't something that we were surprised to learn. We were very, very, you know, we were happy to be able to capture, because I think that's something that, you know, both fans and sort of non-fans alike would really appreciate. This whole summer has been, you know, an amazing story. Their Champions League run was something that absolutely no one expected, you know, and then once that was over, then they had this very steep mountain to climb to try to get into the MLS playoffs. And so so it's been a whirlwind from the moment we had our cameras in camp to even today.
From that moment, you have to go into the storytelling, looking obviously to document, but looking towards a plan. You're doing this on a global icon, and you're doing it for a global platform. So how do you manage telling the story for people in North America, but also people who are familiar with him back in South America, who are familiar with him back in his exploits in Europe? How did you tell that story knowing that you're going to be doing it for very different audiences?
It's a global game, and the passion, it runs incredibly deep. And what was really amazing for us to capture was when Leo was on the road with Inter Miami, and they went to Atlanta, and they went to Philadelphia, and Nashville, and Chicago, and New York, and Los Angeles. You know, these are major metropolitan cities with an incredible, you know, with incredible communities in each, and how the game is manifested individually in those cities is not unlike how you would see that in other countries. You know, you see the Premier League, you see La Liga, you see how every town or city, you know, falls in love with their team and rallies around their team. And that is consistent. It's consistent everywhere you go. So the language of the game is evergreen. You know, the passion for the game is evergreen. And that's how he's become, you know, a global icon and is so relatable to so many. So as storytellers, we just wanted to give viewers a deeper understanding and a greater appreciation for what is being reported on every single day. And unfortunately, with the relationships that we've been able to nurture with Inter Miami and with the MLS, we've been able to do that.
How similar and how dissimilar has this move and its impact been in relation to David Beckham's move to MLS originally?
David Beckham spent a little time with us in the first episode, as viewers will see in episode one. And he described the moment when he made the decision himself to come over and play with the LA Galaxy. And that set up a chain of events that we see today. He is, you know, one of the owners, co-owner of Inter Miami, and him and Jorge Mas and others in the ownership group made it, you know, top of their list was to bring in Lionel Messi. And that, you know, that process of bringing in Lionel Messi started not just, you know, months ago. It predates even when David Beckham made his decision back in 2007. So, and we chronicle these chain of events, these connective events in the first episode. And that'll give viewers on Apple TV Plus an opportunity to have a better understanding what it took to bring Messi to Inter Miami, to America.
In some ways, the story isn't just about Messi. It's about Inter Miami. It's about MLS. How did you go into this project trying to balance telling the impact of Messi coming to America on all of those levels?
It's a good question. So we were entering, you know, that universe in the midst of this transformative moment. And it took a lot of time. It, you know, you just don't show up and say, we're here. You know, you have to take a lot of time because, you know, there's a lot of trust that has to develop because, you know, they were going through a seismic shift themselves. You know, they just had a coaching transition themselves. They had just landed, you know, the greatest player of all time. And on top of that, they had two other incredible players joining them as well. So you had this massive seismic shift happening, and here we are, a documentary unit, and we want to try to capture it all. And, you know, in their first job, they're not here to make a TV show. Yeah, you know, they're there to win games. And so we said that going in, said, listen, we are visitors in your house. You know, we respect your process. We respect the game. And we just want to be woven into the fabric of the everyday. And we'll be here, you know, not just for a week. You know, we're going to be here for months until the end of the season. And that gave them a lot of comfort because things that or an interview that we would want to do one day, you know, could be pushed to a later day. If we didn't get something one week, we could do something the following week. And it gave us the ability to just follow the story. And the story with this organization, especially during the Leagues Cup, as I said before, no one expected. And so it gave us as storytellers an amazing opportunity to tell that story from the inside out.
As you know, there's a long list of documentary filmmakers that would love to have been able to tell this story. Take me back to the process of being able to win the right to tell it and how you became first involved with the project.
So Tim Pastor and Smuggler Entertainment did an amazing job in developing this partnership with the Lionel Messi Group, and it predates the green light of this particular project. And they did just a wonderful job to set the stage and give us opportunities to storytellers like myself to be able to go in and do what we do. And I've been able to bring in producers, incredibly talented producers and editors and director and DPs, all of whom that I've worked with under previous projects, a team that really understood how to work within the ebbs and flows of a professional team, because a season has its ups and has its downs. And so we had the right people to be able to just have the patience to sort of be able to cover the story as it goes up and down, as it typically does in a season. But it all started with a production company that really set the stage, and under Tim Pastor's leadership, Smuggler Entertainment did an amazing job.
As much as it is, by genre, a sports doc, it comes off as a cultural doc made by a football fan, and so you don't have to necessarily be an MLS, diehard fan to enjoy it. Is that an intended goal? And if so, what was the key to getting there?
I mean, our goal was to really give people a much deeper understanding of the game and of Inter Miami and what this transformative moment was all about. And we've heard that discussed, that this is a big moment for soccer in America. But what does that mean exactly? What does that mean for everyday people? And we asked that question everywhere we went. We asked that question to hardcore sports fans of Philadelphia. And that, those stories are documented of how passionate the folks of Philadelphia are for their teams, but they fully admitted they had a softness in their heart for Messi. That didn't mean that they let up on him during the game. We certainly chart that in the second episode. But there was a respect, and you saw that in every city that we visited with Inter Miami. There was a respect, there was a love, and it just boils down to a consistent thread that is the love of the game. Everyone has a passion for their team, but everyone has a passion for the game. And when you have a main character like Lionel Messi who embodies that, all the good of that, we're, incredibly privileged to be able to tell that story through the prism of many others who are impacted.
There's been aspects of his assimilation to the league that if they were in a scripted series, people say, well, that's fake. There's no way that would actually happen. But you're documenting. As you and the crew were documented things, was there a moment or aspect where you thought, and this is too good to be true, what we're getting, what we're witnessing?
A few moments during the League's Cup that, like in Dallas, I think they were behind by several goals in around the 75th minute. And it was like, no way. And they came back and they won in dramatic, such a dramatic way, and we showed that in our second episode, and there's, you had this 18-year-old Benjamin Cremaschi, and we told that story through his dad, a very proud father. And, as those, very relatable feelings for any parent, to see their 18-year-old child out there, not only making this huge difference, but I mean, just, the way that Ben's father told that story really added a depth to what that moment meant. It wasn't just a goal. It wasn't just a win. It meant it was a much deeper meaning for a dad. And so the love of the game is layered throughout this series on so many different levels.
Talk about that love of the game and the love for Messi. In North American sports, generally, if an athlete is dominant, they are intensely loved and at the same time intensely hated. That does not seem to be the case with Messi. Why do you think that is after witnessing the passion for him up close?
A good question. I think that he embodies everything that's good in the game. And he's a humble, very humble individual. And he's a family man. And I think you saw that early on when he scored his first goal. The first people he ran over to hug was his family. You know, they were sitting in the section there right along the field. And that was the first people he of course received the cheers and the hugs from his teammates, but then he ran right over to his family and hugged and kissed them. It means, I think, you know, when you observe an individual who does those types of stuff, you understand in a much different way when you're seeing it, and we're able to capture it with our cameras, and that's what we're really excited. We're really proud of the series, and it just gives people at home a reason to watch MLS on Apple TV Plus, but it also, you know, for those who are non-soccer fans who have heard of Messi this summer, because it was one of the dominant stories of the summer, gives them an opportunity to learn more.
And lastly, interested in your viewpoint on the industry and where it's going in terms of this type of storytelling, because this story is certainly unique, but it's not the only football story this year that we've gotten from Apple TV Plus. It's not the only story of an iconic footballer that we have coming out right now. Is this the tip of the iceberg in terms of this type of storytelling around sports figures, or do you think there's much more room in the industry?
I think that there's always room to tell really great sports stories. You know, as a culture, we need them. You know, we need a way to escape everyday life. We need a way, and there's no better way than on a Saturday or a Sunday, you know, to go and watch a sporting event. But then when we get the opportunity to go inside and tell the inside story and to reveal more than what you learned on the broadcast, I think there's a lot of room to do that, to those type of programs. And you know, really, as I said before, really proud of this project and thankful that Apple TV Plus gave us the platform and the opportunity to be able to tell this type of story. And it's a real-time documentary presented in the moment. And the season is still happening. You know, these three episodes come out tomorrow. You know, they're still in the regular season. And, you know, and when the second three come out, we'll still be in the playoffs, but it won't be 6 months from now. And there's a lot of wonderful documentary series that chart a season, you know, a little bit further out from when it happened. I'm just really excited and proud that we were given this opportunity by Apple TV Plus to be able to do this in real time and present it while it's still happening.
Well, the greatest way to continue to do it is by having great access and having success with the ones that come out. You have had both on this project. You also clearly have editors that love you, because you've been able to put it together so quickly. So something to be thankful for. I'm thankful for this time and for the body of work. Thanks for sharing.
Donovan, thank you for your time. It was great talking.
Thanks so much to Scott. And as I mentioned, he is a genius. Hockey fans are really familiar with 24/7 at this point. But whether or not you like politics, go back, go in the archives, get on Rogers On Demand, watch The Circus, one of my favorite shows on TV. And this docuseries, if you love Messi or not, will become one of your favorites quickly. Messi Meets America, out right now on Apple TV+. After the break, we go deep on a couple of documentaries on Netflix that have had people talking for quite a while.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson has a show.
And I'm so happy that you are listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grandma and Granddad. And I love take them to the ballpark. It is a family affair, as my granddad really, but my grandmother enjoys it as well. Enjoys not just the game of baseball, but everything around it. The theme nights, the giveaways, the fireworks, and all of that fun that started in not just baseball, but in sport, started with Hall of Famer, former baseball owner, Bill Veeck. And he is essentially the main subject of a documentary on Netflix called The Saint of Second Chances. And it's told through the eyes of his son, Mike Veeck, who grew up in the shadow of his father, who certainly was a hustler, so much so that he was exiled from the game he loved when things didn't actually go as planned. So this plot line sounds serious, but this film is actually a bit of a comedy. It's even narrated by Jeff Daniels. It's brought to you by Academy Award winner Morgan Neville from 20 Feet from Stardom and Jeff Malmberg. And big voice in it, as I mentioned, is Mike Veeck himself. And so we catch up with both on the Going Deep podcast. First, we'll talk to Mike Veeck, the subject of The Saint of Second Chances, and then we'll catch up with Jeff Malmberg and Morgan Neville, the filmmakers who brought us this piece of work. That's right here. I'm going to
start at a 1, take it to a 10, and if it gets you arrested, we've gone too far.
This is the true story of a family of baseball hustlers.
My dad used to say, a hustler's not a con man. The hustler believes.
Bang, that's one.
All the fun stuff that happens at baseball games, fireworks, giveaways, you name it, they invented it.
We're going to do something that are going to make people sit up and take notice. There was street theater wrapped around a ball game.
What could possibly go wrong?
10,000 people on that field.
Oh, that's what could go wrong.
Mike, congratulations on an outstanding piece of work and outstanding family story. You made me laugh. You made me cry. You helped me learn. Why were you willing to, you know, be so vulnerable and have your family story told in this piece?
You know, Donovan, there were two reasons. One is I didn't like being my father's son when I first appeared on the planet because I thought, you know, third generation, who cares? They're going to compare you constantly. And my son, Night Train, said, we've spent 100 years in this game. It would be cool to go over it and see from my grandfather on. And he was right. And the second thing was, my daughter was a courageous young woman. And I would have been a phony had I not been able to describe the life I've lived and how it went down. It was a monument to my children, that I be honest.
You say was, but that's past tense. The legacy is still being felt in the game and in sports. When you watch a sporting event, how much of what you see harkens back to the things that were instituted by your family?
That's a great, great question. It makes me internally very proud. And I think about how much they loved this game, that they devoted that time to it. But I think of my, it's impossible to walk in a ballpark and not think of all of my family. And, you know, Larry Doby Jr. and I went to the premiere together. I mean, his dad integrated the American League. And I just look at all these people I've been lucky enough to come in contact with, and it humbles you. It humbles you. But I don't mind looking around once in a while and going, hey, they might have stolen that idea.
But there's still room for more ideas, even though what you were doing was ahead of its time. If you look at sports and even the game of baseball now, so much more competition, including things like Netflix. If you were consulting, what are some of the things that you would want to put in place to make sure that our sports are still relevant to the modern day person?
Access. The number one thing. One of my partners is Bill Murray. And when he's at the ballpark, he's accessible. He's sitting in the stands. He's signing autographs. Major League Baseball has to look at the model that Minor League Baseball has produced and say, we have to get our players and our fans together as often as we can. That's how you develop heroes. Think about race cars. I mean, you know, everybody says my driver, and now they're letting fans into the pit and things like that. And we need, in addition to that, we need to support women in baseball, baseball for all, more projects. And we need to go out and talk to kids, not at middle school, but early on, because that's when they develop their love of whatever game. And right now we have to learn a lot from football, and we should, rather than view them as a competitor, view them as a source of inspiration. Access. We need access.
It's a great thought. You know, in sports now, there's a conversation about these themed nights, which started with you, but now they're have gone even farther, and they're for, you know, equity-seeking groups. Some people feel like they're a distraction. You know, where do you think the balance is between focusing on the product, but also finding other ways to tell stories through sport?
One of the things that I think that is helping baseball right now at the major league level is the fact that players coming into the system are used to minor league setups where they're going to luncheons and dinners and treating camps. And I think that we have to get away from this idea that signing an autograph is, you know, a responsibility. It's a privilege. It's a privilege. And I'd like to think, except for a few times, that I never interfered with the play on the field, but anything you can do in the stands. If you put Bill Murray at first base coaching for a Cub game, there's not major league laughter and minor league laughter, and that's not going to affect the outcome of the game, but it is going to make people feel differently about baseball. So you got to walk that line, and you got to know what exactly people are coming to see, which is the ball game. But entertaining them around that, have at it.
The spirit of this film is really lived through two people, your father and your daughter. If they were to be able to see this film, the way audiences are, what do you think they would think? And what, if anything, do you want audiences to take away from them as people?
Exactly what you said. They were both heroic. They both stood for what they believed in. And what I hope is that my dad would look at this and say, it's a pretty fair account, Miguel. It's okay with me. And my daughter would just go, Daddy, I look pretty good on camera.
Well, she sure does. And they both were and certainly are very proud of you. It's a beautiful story of family and the sport of baseball. Thank you for sharing it. And thank you for spending this time to share your perspective on it.
Thank you so much, son. It was a real pleasure.
Well, thank you for this beautiful film and piece of work. Let's start at the beginning. Why this subject matter? There's so many different stories to tell in sports. What made this one fascinating?
Jeff and I are both sports fans. We've been huge baseball fans our whole life. I've been making documentaries for decades, and I've always wanted to do a sports documentary. And this was the one that just spoke to me. I just felt like it's a sports film, but it's also a film about family. It's a film about redemption and second chances. It's a film about all kinds of other big ideas I liked. And part of it was, you know, I heard Mike Vec talking on the radio and I just felt like I want to get to know him better. I mean, I sent him an email years ago and that's how we ended up here today. It was just sometimes this instinct of like, that guy's interesting. I want to follow him.
Yeah. I always feel like sports movies do it best when they're talking about how sports make us feel. And I mean, this is definitely a story that makes you think about family. I have an 8-year-old daughter. So, you know, talking to Mike about being a father, things like that, it was just instantly something that I felt like Morgan and I would just have a blast exploring together and trying to figure out how best to tell it.
Sports docs are often a linear portrayal of events that happen. This is more than that. It's a comedy. It's satire at times. Take me through the creative approach.
Well, you know, Bill Vec, who's the grandfather of the family, he's in the Baseball Hall of Fame. You know, people kind of refer to him as the P.T. Barnum of baseball. And he has an incredible story. And I think, you know, Jeff and I thought about it. And you could do a whole documentary just about Bill Vec, but it would just feel like a normal sports documentary. And I think what became interesting for us is looking at his son, Mike, and through Mike, the kid who grows up in the shadow of his dad, with the legacy of his dad, trying to help his dad and kind of inadvertently almost hurting his dad's legacy, that became a much more interesting story to us rather than a kind of just a recitation of all the things the Vecs did. It's really about the ethos of what the family is, which is the thing that we all crave, which is kind of understanding how to put joy in our lives.
And, you know, I mean, listen, we've all screwed up at various times in our life, but Mike's screw ups early on are so huge. I was fascinated by a character who doesn't just recover from it by, you know, time healing all wounds, but manifest this team in St. Paul where other people get second chances. That was a beautiful version of a story I've heard a lot of times.
It is in some ways a period piece in terms of where the sport was, where sport ownership was and sports and entertainment was. How did you, for an audience that maybe takes a lot of these things for granted, put in context the types of landmark things that were going on with this family?
You're so right. I mean, we started showing it to test audiences and they just assumed because of modern sports that the Vecs were rich and, well, you know, how could Mike have any problems? And it was like, no, you don't understand. He was, you know, a baseball hustler. He did this by hook and by crook. So it's, you know, it really, I love that part where Bill says, you know, you're talking about $100 bleacher seats. That would ruin the game. You're like, oh, I just bought $200 bleacher seats. So yeah, I mean, it definitely was a more innocent time. I think underneath all that stuff was, you know, also a different time in America. So it was definitely a period piece on a lot of levels. And I don't know, I think it was really, it's interesting to see baseball in a different phase than it is now. It's all very professional now.
It's, you know, someone who jumped out at me in terms of me misremembering this part of their journey was Daryl Strawberry. The aspect of his involvement and getting him on camera, you know, why was that important?
I mean, you know, what Jeff was saying, it's the what Mike does is after he's drummed out of baseball for kind of coming up with the disco demolition debacle and you know, finding himself at the bottom of a bottle some years later and then crawling his way back into the bottom of the minor leagues. And building this team, the St. Paul Saints, that's a place for people to come and be redeemed. There's no better story than Daryl Strawberry for that. And because what happened to Daryl in this chapter that people don't really know about is he went from totally untouchable in baseball in the spring and given a shot with the Saints to the point by the end of the year, he's winning a World Series ring with the Yankees. And that is kind of the perfect example of just sometimes people need a second chance. And Mike gave it to him when nobody else would. And that's what he did with it.
Well, there's a lot of second chances in the film, and a lot of entertainment, laughs, and some tears. So thank you for putting them all in one piece of work. It was really, really impressive.
Well, thanks so much.
Nice to talk to you.
So that Netflix doc is light and upbeat. The next one we're going to talk about, not so much. And actually, people who have seen it feel like it was a bit incomplete. But if you love football, then you'll probably be all in for it. It's four episodes, which is a different approach from what the untold stories normally are. But this is Untold Swamp Kings, all about college football life in Gainesville for the Florida Gators. And it has real good access from the Gators from 2005 to 2010. Not the 90s Gators under Coach Steve Spurrier. It was after all of that talent dried up and Urban Meyer came in to save the program as the new head coach, but brought in a new no-holds-barred attitude. So some of the big names and personalities from those teams, Tim Tebow, Brandon Spikes, Major Wright, Ahmad Black, all in this story, and Urban Meyer also in this story, giving their perspective. It's a story brought to us by director Catherine English, who you probably know from Blair Brown, The New Labor Revolution, or First Ladies. Now, this is a much different story, so I was really interested to hear from Catherine herself what her approach to telling story of a bunch of players over the course of a bunch of years that had a legacy then that, as we look back, is a much different legacy. We go deep on Untold Swamp Kings with Catherine English.
College football in the South is way bigger than professional sports.
When you come to Florida, football is the world here.
Everything is win or loser.
Anything less than winning a national title, you're a failure.
One, two, three, shut down!
Catherine, what a body of work. Multi-episode body of work. Something relatively new for the Untold series. Why was that the approach that made sense for these Florida Gators?
The approach of a series, Donovan.
Yes.
I mean, how could we possibly have fitted it all into one episode? Actually, funnily enough, it started as three episodes, and it just became very clear that it would not fit into three episodes. So we extended it to four. And even then, we had to be quite ruthless with what we chose to cover. It was very tight. But I don't know, making a documentary is about distilling the truth so that you access the real essence of the story. So I think we've been forced to do that, and I hope we've done that effectively.
You mentioned distilling the truth because people will come into it with preconceived notions. Some will come into it expecting to see an amazing football program at its peak. Some will come into it expecting to see a football program that's out of control and destructive. Balancing, you know, those perceptions and finding the truth, what was that process like for you?
So we don't try and editorialize. You know, we talk to the players, we talk to the coaches, and we present what we find. Unmediated. I mean, obviously it is mediated because we've edited it and we've crafted it, but we try and take the story from them. It is their story. We didn't come across a lot of players who were calling the program out of control. We didn't. We came across a lot of players who were half dead after doing their training sessions or who were crying in the weight room, or who were throwing up after a, you know, particularly hard session. And it's shocking when you see it. It's very extreme. But as well as that, it was clearly the best time in these young men's lives. I mean, I feel that's what you get off them, that they really loved that time and they really have it seared on their mind, you know, the experience of it.
You mentioned seeing it because you have the great access. These are not things that you had to recreate. The amount of footage you had to go through for those years, but also getting that great footage. What was that process of discovery like?
Well, it was just unbelievably fortunate. When we started production, we did not have the archive. We were setting out to make the film with just interviews and football game footage, and then whatever actuality we were going to film of the players. We started hearing rumors about tapes that had been recorded during the exact time frame we were looking at. We pursued the rumors. We kept going, where are the tapes? You know, we need to find the tapes. And eventually they pitched up under someone's desk 650 tapes from the period. So then it was quite a large job to catalogue and log, go through every single role and log it and find out what was on it. But it was just a complete game changer, because all the things that the players had talked to us about were in those tapes. We could find, you know, exact games where they described the scene in the locker room before they ran on the field. We'd find that tape. Or not even, we'd find two different cameras that covered that tape. So it really, it was just amazing, amazing as a filmmaker to have that wealth of footage. Great, great bonus, really.
You talked about being ruthless. I'm sure you had to be ruthless with who you spoke to as well, given the amount of characters back then. What was the decision process like in determining how you were going to get specific characters to help tell this story?
I mean, I think that for me personally was the hardest thing, because I would have wanted to interview everyone and it's just impossible, you know. But everyone that we spoke to, and we spoke to a lot of players, was, you know, so generous with their time and contributed to our understanding of the period. But ultimately, you kind of, you know, we are so limited with time, we had to sort of drill down. And it was a combination of us selecting players and players choosing to be in it. Some, you know, some just didn't want to go there. And but most did. And we tried to acknowledge every player, you know, as much as we could.
Well, it was an outstanding piece of work throughout. I'm watching, thinking, how much of this could still happen today, good, bad, or indifferent? But it was great to go back into that time in sports and in college football. Thank you so much, and congratulations.
Thank you, Donovan. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much to Catherine, and let us know what you think, not only about the conversations, but about the actual bodies of work. The content that we have talked about here today, go watch, because it is worth a watch. And then hit us up. We welcome the feedback. Feel free to listen, favorite, share, and subscribe. And stay tuned to this very space, because we've got more great content coming up. Thanks for listening.